Thanks for coming on, man.
Glad to be here. Yeah.
How did your season go this year?
What year is it?
Yeah, 22.
It was a whirlwind. 22 was a whirlwind. Just fast. Like the year just flew by. It was busy.
Yeah. What were you racing?
I was racing. I really need to think about this. That's sort of the blur of 22. I was racing for Wayne Taylor Racing in the Lamborghini Super Trofeo Championship in North America.
Okay, so that is that everyone's in a Lamborghini.
Correct. Yeah, everybody's in a Lamborghini Huracan Super Trofeo.
Like a GT3.
It's close to a GT3 car. More power, about 200 more horsepower, but not quite the downforce. A little heavier as well.
So you raced the whole championship for them?
Did the whole series, yep. I also did the full season IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge. We started the year off in the Toyota Supra GT4.
Okay.
And finished the year in the Ford Mustang GT4. Okay. I also did a couple of IMSA WeatherTech sports car races in Le Mans Prototype, the LMP3 category. That was in the Duquesne LMP3 chassis.
Those are more and more people are buying those things and racing those, eh?
We're seeing more of it. It's a little bit more affordable for teams and drivers. When you compare to a GT3 car, or an LMP2 car, they're both just so much more expensive to operate. The LMP3 is sort of a spec formula, cost capped, and just more affordable for teams. Seeing more of that. What else? I did an IMSA WeatherTech sports car race in GT3 in the Acura NSX. And I did a number of SRO GT World Challenge races in Mercedes, AMG GT4.
Okay.
It was about 28 race events.
Okay. That's what you did? So busy summer.
Busy. And it sort of all kicked off in January. My wife and I had our first baby.
Okay. Congrats.
And it was just shotgun from that point. And it was...
Did they travel with you?
They did. We bought an Airstream last September with the intention of spending more time on the road. We've talked about it for a long time. Mm. I'm away so much of the year, over the half of the year I'm out of the country. And so my wife, she's self-employed interior designer. She often would travel with me, but now that we were expecting our first child, we figured... let's get an Airstream and drive to many of these races and, enjoy life on the road from one event to the next. And so that's what we did. So Amy and Beckett is our son's name. They came with me to probably what, 70, 75% of the races.
Wow.
A lot, yeah.
So you guys were just hauling around the country.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Yes.
And he was born in January. That is very good timing as far as being a race car driver.
It was too close. I'm going to take a sidestep. I watched, Amy made me watch, she didn't made me, she suggested that I watch, The Art of Racing in the Rain. And I just watched it last week for the first time. And, she's like, how did nobody tell us our story was so close to sort of the storyline of that movie, when he, took this race opportunity. He got a race drive at Daytona in the movie. I think it might even be with Penske or something. And his wife's pregnant. And next thing she goes into labor while he's in the race at Daytona. This was like our story.
Wow.
None of our friends or relatives that have seen the movie even brought this up. But that's basically what happened. I did no testing at Daytona. The whole roar before the 24, sort of a 3-day test. I skipped that altogether because we were just too close to our delivery date.
So you just wanted to be home?
Yeah, so I was home. Yeah. Just being that it was our first, I think we were just nervous that maybe, she would go into labor early. And her sister, who had their first about 9 months before this went into labor, about 3 months or 3 weeks early. So we thought, well, and her mom apparently did many times. So it was like, all right, I best just stay home. The team was very gracious, and we found a substitute driver to do all of the testing at Daytona. And my teammate, Sheena Monk, she was also just very accommodating.
Yeah.
So anyways, I don't do any of the testing. This is a new car, new team for me. And then the race weekend comes, and I intend to fly down the night before the race.
Right.
And there was like a morning warm-up that I would do. That would be my only practice laps before the race. And so I fly down the night before, and we roll out for the morning warm-up, and I leave pit lane and just about crash in going into turn three at Daytona. Like I just left the pits. I go to push the brake pedal for the first time. I have no brakes.
Oh my goodness.
The team, a new car to the team, they changed rotors and pads and everything. Just basically our race package was put on the car for this warm-up, and the lines got pinched. And so...
Like no brakes. People say, oh, I had no brakes. And it's like, yeah, you had a little, yeah, okay.
Had nothing. And so managed to keep it out of the wall and limp it home. And that was my practice. And so then it was, you know, race time, and I was doing the closing stint.
Okay.
And so I jump in the race car and we had a good race. I think we ended up finishing 12th, which isn't, you know, nothing to brag about, but we were the highest finishing Toyota. Yeah, we were the quickest of the Toyotas. So, you know, from what we can compare against, it was a good result for us.
Sure.
We're going to build on that. Did the race, and then literally in my suit, jump in the rental car and get rushed to the airport to fly back. And I board the plane, and we're taking off. And we're like, I have a connection in Atlanta. I fly out of Daytona, and I'm connecting in Atlanta. And we're 10 minutes from Atlanta. And the pilot comes on, you know, I guess there's turbulence, and he's saying there's wind gusts. I don't know what they call it, but we can't land. We had to turn around and go back to Daytona.
Oh, my goodness.
No, sorry. Yeah, we turned around, went back to Daytona, and sat on the tarmac for a few hours, and then, you know, flew to Atlanta
later on.
Missed my connection, so I ended up sleeping in Atlanta airport.
You must have just been full of anxiety the whole time.
Got home the next day, and I'll fast forward this, but I got home the next day, walked through the doors, exhausted, sat on the couch, and like literally 2 hours later, my phone went off. Amy got off the couch to go grab it, and water broke, and you know, we were off to the hospital, yeah. You know, 2 hours after walking through the door. So it was
that's a whirlwind.
Sort of how the year kicked off.
Wow. Wow, that's cool. Oh, that's good. Let's go back to, I guess with every racer I have on, I want to figure out how they got into the sport. And for most guys kind of our age, it's go-karting, but, you know, Paul Tracy was like, yeah, I had a little, you know, motorcycle or whatever, but was it go-karting for you?
From a...
First, you know, motorsport.
From a competitive standpoint, yes, but it's, I think my passion was found before, you know, go-karting. I have memories of, you know, sitting on grandfather's lap, driving a Volkswagen Jetta through the fields next door to the house. I had a dirt bike as a kid and used to, you know, race that up and down the street.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Sutton, Pefferlaw area. Yeah. And my uncles, Michael and Peter, both raced motorcycles and dirt bikes professionally. And so that's, I was kind of a fan of them.
Right.
Looked up to them. My dad was a mechanic for them. We kind of had... you know, speed in the blood, but there was no form of auto racing in the family. And it was my uncle Mike took me to the go-kart track in Goodwood, got introduced to it. And then I remember sitting down with my dad and just sort of saying, this is what I want to do. And we got a used Honda 5.5 horsepower on an old chassis and got started. But
yeah. How old were you when you got into karting?
First race, I was 11.
Okay, so not too far behind, but by today's standards, a little bit late.
I spent a summer of just driving the go-kart at my school parking lot, and then the next summer got to do my first race.
And you raced at Goodwood?
Sutton.
Sutton, okay, yeah, yeah. And then, so was that something where you were fast right away and had success right away?
I'd love to say yes, but I did finish second in my first race in the B category.
I remember, yeah.
At that time, there was like, the car counts were so big that there was an A group and a B group. And so...
in the B main.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember doing my first practice day at Sutton and knowing nothing. And, you know, I'm coming up behind another carter. It was female carter, actually. And she was tapping the back of her head. And I'm like, what is she saying? What do I do? You know, then I learned that, you know, it was bump draft, you know. Yeah. Give me a push.
Yeah, that's good. So was it your dad taking you to the track?
Yeah, my uncle and my dad, it was the two of them.
Okay. And they were pretty keen, I assume.
Yeah, it was never, and there was never a lot of pressure, but they were both right into it, you know, yeah.
So from my first time ever hearing about you, I was telling you before we started recording, was I showed up to the 2005 Barrie Grand Prix and you were racing an 80. And I was like... I raced Hondas only, and all I ever wanted to do was race a shifter kart, right? So, I watched every session, and you won that.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. That's from starting, you know, in a little Honda to racing in 80 shifter kart at Barrie is a big jump.
Sure, yeah.
How did you just grow up racing four strokes and then...
I did, everything was fast-tracked for me. We didn't have, you know, big money to kind of... do things the right way, and you know, you do like a two-year program and then advance and a two-year program. It was like, I got to keep going. And so it all happened really, really fast. My first, you know, go-kart race was in 2001. My last go-kart race was 2006. It was a
wow
short window in go-karts. And it was from, you know, junior light 5.5 Honda to the 125 shifter sort of in that time. Yeah, it's a little foggy. 01 was in the four cycle, I think 02, and then 03 was my first year in a shifter cart. And 03, or maybe it was 03 or 04, actually. But my dad, he got me on a Yamaha, and it was a bone stock Yamaha, whereas all the top guys had, you know, Swede Tech built Honda CR80s. And so I remember my first year doing the Barrie Grand Prix in 80. I mean, I had to look behind me on every straightaway because somebody was going to pass me. Like, we were just down so much power on the straightaways, but I learned how to brake.
Yep.
And I learned how to get through the corner quick. And then the next year, it was kind of like, I had the opportunity to join Cameron Motorsports, and they were like, you know, one of the big teams in the sport at that time, and you know, got a brand new go-kart, a brand new engine, and then that would have been, you know, for the 05 season, and we won at Barrie that year. Yeah.
Wow. And then, so at that time, you're how old?
I would have been 15.
15, okay. So that's kind of the age where people start looking at cars, or you're able to at least race a car at that point. You go and race senior 125 for a winter?
I did... So yeah, it would have been, I guess, 2 years of 80. I think it was 04, 05, and then I guess, yeah, the 06 season, I think, was the only year doing the 125. Yeah, I did the Florida Winter Tour that year. It would have been a busy year.
And was that a big, like, was that a big commitment for your family financially to go do? Because I remember just, like, it's a lot of money to race a shifter cart. Yeah. And to go down to the States, and was it like a conversation, or was it, okay, this is just the next logical step?
No, I was fortunate at that point when I was able to join Cameron Motorsports. They took care of a big chunk of it. I think our responsibility at that point was tires, entry fees, and maybe the motors, I think. But, you know, carts were provided, you know, mechanics were provided, you know, wear, tear parts, things like that. So it was manageable for us. And, I think we did the Florida Winter Tour, the Stars of Karting, kind of, it was a packed, you know, packed karting season.
When, I guess, right around that time, I guess, maybe it was a little bit earlier, but you were like, I'm quick. I'm quick enough to maybe look at racing as a career, or at least continue racing or progress quickly out of go-karting. How did that thought process, you know, was there a mentor? Was there, you know, self-initiated?
That's a good question. I think from an early age, all I ever thought about was motorsport and becoming a, you know, professional racing driver. I can, you know, I have fond memories or vivid memories of just being so driven, no pun intended. Like, this is all I thought about. You know, it's all I knew. I just didn't even consider doing anything else. Fortunately, had some success to kind of back it up,
yeah,
keep going. '06, I was selected by Ron Fellows to do the, as part of the Team Ultra 94.
Right.
I think maybe that was like a sort of a kickstart, like, hey, you know, you've got something, see what you can make of it. So that would have put me in that Bridgestone F2000 series the following year. And then, you know, some of the carters that I was competing against and or carters that were, you know, 1 year ahead of me, you know, were all making the jump. Formula BMW at that time was kind of the place to go in the U.S. and in Europe.
Wickens and Morad.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, those would probably be the two guys that were just sort of one step in front of me. So that was the sort of the plan. It was like, I gotta make the step as well.
Right. And so what was that step? Right to Formula BMW or something like that?
No, I never did Formula BMW. I wanted to. I went to Valencia, Spain, did the, they've got the, like the academy that I think everybody has to go through. I don't remember, but you kind of get your license. I think it gives you like an FIAC or something like that. Anyways, I did the Formula BMW school in Valencia, came back from that, had a couple of tests with teams and budgets. I remember, you know, were anywhere from 250,000 to 400,000 to do a season of Formula BMW, and, you know, completely out of the question. You know, my father was a bricklayer at the time. I grew up as a mason and you know, just transitioning into building homes. Gave me the shirt off his back, but certainly out of the question for us financially. I remember my dad gave me his little black binder full of business cards, and he's like, you know, call anyone you want.
Yeah.
I called every name in the book asking for sponsorship. I called every single BMW dealership across Canada telling them, you know, who I am, what I'm trying to do. And I got a no from every one of them. But I was persistent. I remember going into this sports store, Action Sports. They sold ATVs, dirt bikes, and Barry. And my dad waited in the truck in the parking lot. I walked in and pitched them on a sponsorship. I'd come in after school and sweep the floors. And I ended up getting $5,000 from them. Okay. It was a start. Yeah. And I did get, there was a company called Lafarge, still active today, big concrete company. I got $500 of sponsorship from the local branch in Barrie. And anyways, fast forward, I ended up generating about $25,000 in sponsorship, a long ways from the 250 to 400 that I needed.
So the goal was the season of Formula BMW?
I was trying.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
I was trying. And, yeah. And so anyways, I scrounged $25,000. And so Formula BMW was out of the question. And so I was guided to the Ontario Formula Ford 1600 series. Yeah. I was introduced to Brian Graham, who lived in Innisfil, still does, and the budget was $50,000.
So, you know, halfway
there.
Yeah.
And my dad, you know, obviously taught me up, and we got the $50,000 together. I had a number of sponsors that year, you know, from $100 to $10,000 sort of thing. And that was for the 07 season. I did it with Brian, and we won the championship. And then it was, okay, where do we go from here? And it was the U.S. F2000 series was kind of the next step. It's almost...
And who was guiding you, though, like as far as that being the next step? Or did it just seem logical, or was it you?
Ron Fellows was a guy that I would talk to often. David Emperingham was another guy that I talked to often. And then I think, you know, Brian Graham became kind of an influencer as well as to the direction to go, and it was, you know, sort of driven by budget as well.
For sure, yeah.
I did a after winning the Formula Ford Championship, I did a test with I was awarded a test with Brian Stewart in the Indy Lights car, and you know, he was trying to get me to do the Indy Lights season with him, and again, we just couldn't generate the kind of money. So the USF 2000 series was kind of the next attainable goal, and doing it with Brian, who was very reasonable and basically did it for what it cost. I think the budget was like $115,000 or something like that. Lafarge expanded their role with me, and it ended up going from $500 to $35,000.
Wow.
And so I was able to kind of just keep going, and we did the USF 2000 series in 08, finished third, and you know, the momentum kind of kept going.
So, and I enjoy the aspect of finding money as well in racing. Like, that is, that's a key part of it. I guess I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I assume, you know, unlike other people early on, you realize that that's the driving factor. You don't get a ride unless you can generate sponsorship.
Yeah, absolutely. I learned at a early age that if I'm going to make a career at this, it's on me. Like I gotta find money to get myself in the seat. You know, it matures you real quick. It also teaches you just the real world, really, you know, business, you know, how to sort of put yourself in others' shoes. You know, how can I help to make you more money or save you money by investing in me, you know? And it was, you know, you start to learn about business to business, and you just, you learn to get creative. But I knew, you know, and I had no, I should back up a step. I didn't enjoy it. I hated asking for money. Like, right. It is so belittling, you know? But it was just sort of the fact of life at the time. Like, yeah. How do I keep my career going? I need sponsorship to do that.
Yeah. It's funny to, you know, you go from, and every racer does it, they go from, and some at different ages, but they go from being a go-kart racer or whatever it may be, or even a race car driver and paying to do it, to you have to, if you're going to make a living at it, flip the switch in your brain to, I deserve to be paid to do this. And then, you know, I think for some people it's difficult to flip that switch and you know, feel confident in asking for that money.
Yeah. Yeah, I, you know, I have a lot of drivers now that will ask me for advice or, you know, how did you, you know, make it to where you are? And really, it goes from a point of every driver has to make an investment at the beginning. I, in an ideal world, you want to go from making an investment to then, you know, getting free drives to then, you know, getting a paycheck. And certainly not easy, but, you know, that was my mindset, is okay, at a certain point, I can't keep finding sponsorship money. I need to get paid. Like, this needs to become a career. And there was a period of free drives before sort of paid.
So take me through that. You do the USF 2000 series, and you were third in that championship. And then how does that progress into sports car racing and free drives?
Sure. So I think up until that point in the USF 2000, I still had very much an open wheel mindset. I think I was realistic to know that, like, Formula One was a little bit unattainable for me.
Why?
I think I just knew that I needed to be in Europe, or I needed to be racing in specific series like F3. And I recall reaching out to some, you know, German F3 teams or European F3 teams. But I think it was, if anything, IndyCar was of interest.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, I just wanted to drive a race car. And I was a fan of sports car racing. I would, you know, go to Mossport every year to watch the American Le Mans series. So I think that kind of became my new goal. My new direction was, after the 08 season, I couldn't generate the kind of money needed to do Indy Lights or Formula Atlantic two big series at the time, kind of steps below IndyCar. You know, I needed $500,000, and I couldn't generate that kind of money. And so that was a sort of a transition point that if I want to make a career at this, I got to consider sports car racing. And so my mindset at that point, and I'm still getting guidance from others around me, again, Ron, Dave, a number of Canadians that had made it, you know, in the sport. So America Le Mans Series was the new goal. And at the time, there was a series called Prototype Lights, which is now the LMP3 cars. They have like a sprint series where it's all LMP3 cars. In 2009, it was called Prototype Lights, and it was a Formula Mazda, Formula Star Mazda, with sports car bodywork over it.
Okay, with like prototype looking body.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It was the single seater, you know, monocoque with prototype bodywork. So it was called the IMSA Prototype Lights. And there was three teams in the America Le Mans series that were also running a car in Prototype Lights. I just figured that if I'm going to have any shot at the big show in America Le Mans series, I want to be with one of those three teams, do well with them, and then, you know, kind of get advanced internally. The first team was a team running an LMP2 car, the Mazda LMP2 factory program, and they ended up closing their doors around that time. So that option was off the table. The other two, one was a privateer program running a Dodge Viper and GT2 that was also running a Prototype Lights car. And the third was a team out of Ohio, Intersport Racing. They were running a Lola LMP1 car as well as Prototype Lights. So that became my goal. And I call Intersport Racing and got a pretty quick no, we're not interested. They were only running the IMSA Lights car for their sponsor, Very Berry Exotics at the time.
Okay.
And
what was Very Berry Exotics?
I'm not even sure, okay. To be honest with you. I think it might have been a collector.
Okay.
The gentleman that owned Very Berry Exotics and sponsored the LMP1 car was the same, was who was driving the IMSA Lights car.
Got it.
And so they said, we're only running it for him. It's a sponsor of ours. So I said, okay. And I was persistent. I called back. And I called back again. And eventually, I don't know why, and they said, okay, let's talk. They gave me a budget. I think it was $140K. And I was able to generate like 100 or something like that. So anyways, they ran me for three quarters of the season. We didn't do all the races, just for budget reasons. But I won a bunch of them. And then I got to test in their LMP1 car at the end of the year at Mid-Ohio.
Right, which was really the goal.
Yeah, and this thing was a rocket ship. 850 horsepower, twin turbo, carbon ceramic brakes. And I'm coming from, you know, the fastest thing I've driven is 200 horsepower, and so it was an eye opener, but it was a good day, and I was quicker than the team drivers in the LMP1 car.
Really?
I got a little bit reamed out by the team owner that I was maybe trying too hard, but I didn't put a wheel wrong, and it was a good day. I left feeling pretty good. And
how do you like? And so often, you know, and this is the time really before iRacing, race car drivers just had to step up. You know, if you get your one shot and it's like, okay, you got it. And was that your mindset? Like, I've got to show them how fast I am and this is it.
Totally, yeah. I had one day in an LMP1 car. I had no more money to do something the next year. It was like, all right, we're sticking to the plan here.
And you just wheeled it.
Day went well. It was a dry day. And I never forget, like, that car got from point A to point B so fast. And when I hit the brakes, you know, you whack your head off the wheel, like, it just stopped so fast. But it was incredible at the same time. Like, just fell in love with this thing. And so it was a good day. I went fast, didn't put a wheel wrong. And then the owner, John Field, said to me shortly thereafter, all right, you know, we're interested. We want to run, there's a new category in the America Le Mans series for the 2010 season. It was called Le Mans Prototype Challenge, LMPC. Prototype racing was was dying a little bit at that time. There wasn't a lot of manufacturers involved. There was only a handful of cars. I think like the Audi LMP1s were the cream of the crop.
Yep.
And then you had a couple of privateer prototype teams, but the sport prototype category was struggling. So American Le Mans Series introduced this LMPC class as a spec prototype, very similar to the LMP3 right now, which we're seeing in IMSA WeatherTech. Spec prototype, cost capped, much more affordable, you know, just a way to kind of increase the car counts in prototype racing. So the team said, we want to run one of these cars. And so, long story short, I found they needed help to get the car, but then they were going to finance the operating cost
the whole season.
So I found an investor in Ontario here who bought the car, and then they financed the season, and I made my professional debut in American Le Mans Series. The 12 hours of Sebring 2010. I was 20, and that's kind of how the tables turned from bringing money to, okay, now it's a free drive.
Did you have a feeling? Like a pinch yourself? Like, I'm a real race car driver now? Like, I'm not bringing a paycheck at all for this?
No, I can't recall, like, you know, there was never really much of a, I guess, an ego or I still had a job to do. Like, I still wasn't where I wanted to be.
Sure.
But yeah, it was cool. Like, it was a big deal. It was a dream come true moment, you know, to, you know, national anthems are going, jets are flying above. Like, this is the big show now. And so anyways, we kicked off the season. It was a good year. I ended up spending 10, 11, and 12 with Intersport, with that same team. And in 2012, the tables turned again, and I started getting a paycheck.
From them?
Yes.
So what were you doing? And, you know, I guess those are kind of the years people are in school anyways, but what were you doing to make money during that time from 20?
It was still sponsorship, actually.
So you would find personal sponsors. Yeah. Okay.
I was able to have some real estate on the car, and I still would work daily to find sponsorships. I moved down to Ohio, spent, you know, some time there just kind of to invest myself with the team and in the shop. But yeah, sponsorships were still how I was able to support myself. I got a bit of prize money. Okay. And all while actually paying this investor back. So I was generating sponsorship to, you know, put some money in my pocket, but also pay back the investor. I had a 2-year deal to pay him back. And this was a $400,000 race car.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, it was a free drive, but I still had some risk, you know, involved, right? And so it took me 3 years. It wasn't until, I think, the 2013 season, you know, now that I'm making a paycheck, that I was able to pay the car off. And then as soon as I owned the car, the team actually bought it from me. So it was cool. It was...
That's a cool deal, yeah.
It was nice. But yeah, that's kind of how it all went down. And
they started, so at the end, and you're trying to negotiate with the team the whole time about getting a paycheck, or they just thought it was...
I remember having conversation, basically, like, you know, I'm racing against guys like, you know, Bruno Junqueira, Butch Leitzinger, guys that were, you know, IndyCar drivers, professional sports car drivers, earning a paycheck doing this, and, you know, I'm beating them and getting pole positions, or, you know, we're on the podium, or we're winning races. And so that became my leverage, really. I just said, like, I'm racing against guys that are earning a paycheck. I need to earn a paycheck. And it wasn't a difficult negotiation. It happened pretty easily, actually. And yeah, that's kind of how.
So, and then that was the last year with them?
Yeah, it without getting into too many details, the team changed names a couple of times, actually, and it was eventually taken over by another organization, but I stayed with them as it changed hands, and then the end of 2013, I moved on to another team.
Okay. And when did you know, I didn't follow your career during that time or anything, but the first time I kind of noticed was kind of really sports car racing with Martin Barkey. When did that happen?
Yeah, so Martin MBRP was one of my sponsors.
Okay, so he was already involved.
He was involved. I met Martin at Mossport. He had a Dodge Viper. I didn't know who he was at the time, but it was at a track day. I used to rent Mossport once a year, and I would just host a track day. He came, and then he called me afterwards and asked if I had ever done any sort of private instruction and coaching and whatnot. And I said no, but you know, we arranged something, and we went back to Mossport. And I remember, I think he paid me up front for the day, and it got rained out. And so it was like an IOU that we kind of laughed about. I don't know if I ever paid him back or gave him his instruction. But long story short, he eventually started racing at a club level regionally here in Ontario. Had a knack for it, and you know, wanted to move up. And pro-am racing it started to sort of become the norm or make up a bulk of the grid in American Le Mans Series. Mm-hmm. And really even today, like in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, over half of the field is made up of pro-am entries. And it's,
explain that a little bit.
So, it's, I guess the simple way to look at it is from a driver rating standpoint. The FIA gives you a, driver rating based on your experience and performance, and from bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. The bronze and silver being classified as amateur, gold and platinum being classified as professional. And IMSA has adapted, you know, this FIA ranking system, as well as SRO, which is another big GT-only championship in North America and Europe. Anyways, they've adapted this driver rating system and then built the structure of the classes around that. So in GT3, for example, there is a pro class, which is GTD Pro, and there's a pro-am class, GTD pro-am. And it's mandatory to have, if you're running that category, to have one
pro and one amateur.
One amateur in the car. So anyways, and a bulk of the grid is made up of that category.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, that's how a lot of racing gets funded, is through the amateur.
Yeah, like just, I guess in the last 10 years, we're seeing a lot of that. You know, there's just, maybe it's a lack of corporate sponsorship money in sports car racing. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But it just seems, yeah, the last decade, the AMs have been a big source of the sports funding, and a lot of them, I mean, at that level, like they're doing a good job. Like they're not far off the pro pace. It's they're AMs because they have a career outside the sport, but a lot of them at that level have done it now for so many years that, you know, they're, you know, often with, you know, from a second to, you know, 1 to 3 seconds sort of off of a pro lap. Like it's pretty
respectable. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, with Martin Barkey there at MBRP, that was kind of his path he wanted to race. And, so he came up through the ranks, and I was coaching him a little bit along the way. And then, 2019, we drove together in an Acura NSX GT3 car. This was in the SRO GT World Challenge, an all GT3 championship, and together we won the Pro-Am championship that year, and then he hung up the helmet after that.
Okay.
But yeah, he was a big player in my career early on, and yeah.
Right. So then, are you, like, I guess the whole time, and I you know, personally say I look at it from a different perspective, you know, or maybe not at all, but I'm always looking for sponsorship because I own the whole car and I can sell the whole car. At this point in your career, do you always get some real estate where you're always hunting for some sponsorship to supplement your income, or are you just looking for that paycheck?
I think it. I it, the foundation of the program needs to be a paycheck, mm-hmm. and but then I will, you know, once that's, you know, the contract signed, I still actively, you know, work on sponsorships. I think it's an a valuable asset as a professional driver, even to be able to have some brands, you know, come along with you. And we see this even at in a Formula One level, right? You know, in IndyCar, we see this. But yeah, I would say there needs to be, the foundation needs to be, you know, a paycheck, a salary, you know, to do the job. And then you sort of add on to it with some sponsorship. And I think the teams appreciate that. I think the reality is, you know, I don't take what I do for granted. I know that there's a driver that will take my spot tomorrow if I don't perform. But also, with respect to sponsorships, it's just kind of like a value add that I, you know, could bring. You know, if a team's got a choice between A or B driver and they're the exact same speed, you know, but A, you know, brings a corporate partner as well, it's sort of an easy decision.
Right, for sure. Now, I guess we've talked so much about the, you know, the driving factor, which is the money behind the sport, but the performance has to be there. What, I guess there's, you know, there's fitness, there's racing in the real world, and then there's iRacing. Those are kind of the pillars I look at. Nutrition goes along with fitness. But when did you get on, I guess, sim racing or realize the value in it?
Truthfully, I don't do a lot of it. I did at the start of, during this pandemic, you know, it was kind of a go-to, but I was terrible. I was just so bad on the simulator.
I hear you. Yeah.
And it's easy to blame the equipment, I think. it's fun, but man, it's easy to get frustrated, you know? So yeah, truthfully, I don't do a lot of sim racing. I have spent a number of days on at a factory level on the simulators. Ford, I've spent some time on Ford simulator down in Charlotte, as well as Toyota's.
I've been to the Toyota one. Okay. Yeah, that's special, that place. Yeah,
totally. And there, it's a tool. You know, it's an engineering tool. This was while I was part of the Lexus GT3 program. They were pretty useful of Toyota simulator, and we would often, you know, engineers would be involved from a satellite operation, and we would test things on the car on the simulator, and then, you know, show up to the race with a baseline that we tested at the sim, and it was pretty good, pretty useful. But beyond that, sort of as a hobby, I don't do much of it.
Fair enough. And then what about, you know, it's so different sports car racing to IndyCar, say, as far as fitness goes. Do you just enjoy fitness, or are you, you know, following a racer-specific fitness pit fit style program?
Yes, we are athletes as race car drivers, right?
Sure. Depends who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy fitness. It's a part of the sport. I would say, personally, my biggest challenge in the race car is the heat, and it's difficult to train for that. You know, maybe it's just being here, you know, in Ontario, dealing with the temperatures we do. But when I go down to Florida, you know, for January's Rolex 24 or Sebring 12 Hour, those first few races in Florida, they're tough. And it's tough to acclimate to the heat. Beyond that, you know, the endurance aspect, I sweat a lot too. I lose a lot of water weight in a race, which is difficult because then you're managing cramps, like cramps in your hands and your feet. But we don't have to deal with the same, you know, like G-force that you would in an IndyCar. I would say from a sort of a muscular standpoint, your neck and probably like low back and glutes from braking is probably the single biggest strain in an endurance role, you know, when you're pushing the brake however many times a lap for 2 or 3 hours at a time. Yeah, I enjoy fitness. It would be a part of my life even outside the sport.
Sure. Yeah. Now that you're, how old are you? 32, 33, 32? Looking back on it, would you have done things differently or looked at different series, you know, with the hindsight now?
No, I don't think so. I think, it's all circumstantial, really. It kind of goes back to money, you know. If money's no object,
sure,
then, you know, yeah, the path might be different, but it's somewhat circumstantial. But for me, in my position, looking back over my career, I don't think I really would have chose a different path. I think the one conscious transition I made also was, you know, coming from go-karts, okay, it was single-seaters was a natural progression. From single-seaters, prototypes was kind of a natural progression. And then in 2014, it was a conscious decision for me to get away from prototypes and focus on GT. And that was sort of a career decision that I felt there was more opportunities in GT than there are in prototype, more manufacturers involved, more teams, more cars on the grid. And from, you know, my standpoint too, my goal, my dream at a certain point and still today was to be a factory guy. It was to work with one brand. Go back to Ron's story with GM. You built a career with one brand and then a career after the sport. So I'd say maybe if anything, like there's a lot of that now, you know, Porsche, Mazda, there's a lot of brands that are trying to develop talent and have internal, you know, junior programs. And I'd say maybe a bit more focus on something like that would have maybe been something I would do differently. I was kind of taking any opportunity I could.
Yeah, I see what you mean. You did the, was it last year, 2 years ago? You did some Pinty's racing, the NASCAR? Yes. Did you?
I had a blast.
Yeah. How did that come about? Was it just to, you know, did you have a sponsor lined up or did you just want to do some and taste it?
Yeah. Number one, I respect, earlier, the generation of like the AJ Foyts and the Mario Andretti's that would drive anything and everything. And do well, and I respect that. I wanted to be versatile, even today, looking back over this season, I'd have to count, but it was probably six different race cars from prototypes to GT3 to GT4, you know. In that case, it was thrown in a stock car into the mix, but I want to be versatile. In that specific instance, I've had an interest in NASCAR for quite some time, specifically the Pinty series. The racing just looks so fun, and it was. Also from just kind of a regional standpoint, having some sort of foundation here at home, I don't have any interest in a full season program, but I would love to do just like, you know, like a four or five race program each year that fits within my sports car schedule. And it's just kind of like you have a Canadian brand on the car with you, and it's just a nice foundation, you know, some local fans. That's of interest to me. But thanks to Dave Jacobs, I was able to do two races. It was going to be three originally, but it was ended up being two, the Three Rivers round and then the CTMP round, doubleheader there. And I loved it. Like, the car's fun to drive. It's old school.
It is, yeah.
No nannies, no assists. The racing is great. I love the tire degradation, how, you know, the brakes fade, how you have to just kind of manage your equipment over a race. And like, I don't know how you guys set the lap you did in qualifying. I was so far off in qualifying, but then my race pace was strong. And like, so I just don't know the car and the tire well enough, but.
Well, and you don't want to bin it, you know, before you even get to.
But yeah, you guys are rockets on that, you know, single lap qualifying run. So I was glad that I capped it off with a podium.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun. I still want to do more. That year it worked out in 21. It was a relatively slow year on the sports car side, so it worked out nicely. This year it was conflicts and I wasn't able to put something together.
I can't talk about it enough. Like, just if, you know, for anyone who's a sports car guy or whatever, like if you could, and especially being a Canadian, right? But if you could put together racing Mosport twice, Three Rivers, the Toronto Indy, like that's a cool deal for the summer. And like, and you're racing, you know, all the guys up front are fast.
Oh yeah. And it's affordable too, from again, from an investment standpoint for a brand. Like, you know, you try to sell a sports car rate, like it's a minimum $100,000 per race for the teams in the IMSA WeatherTech series. Trying to go to a sponsor for that kind of money, that's tough. You know, but the NASCAR Pinty series, great exposure, great fan base, great racing for a fraction of the investment. And I would encourage any Canadian driver, regardless of their career path, to look at building something in that series.
Yeah, I agree completely. Who, and I actually, I asked Daryl Timmers this question, and just, you know, being a fan of so much racing and being a real racer, you're telling me earlier, you're like, you know, kind of bashfully, like, I'm not really a car guy, I'm just really a racer. But if you had the ability to elevate any series to the prestige that Formula One is, what would be your ideal car or form of motorsports? Like, what do you enjoy most? Like, it could be go-karting, I mean, it could be freaking lawnmowers, it could be prototypes, you know what I mean?
Sure. And I'm not saying this just because I am currently a sports car guy, but I enjoy GT3 racing. I think it's, from a fan standpoint, the cars are relatable. Mm. I like that you've got your Porsche Corral, your BMW Corral, your Corvette Corral, and they're cheering for their brand. I like that the cars, you know, you can go wheel to wheel and you can bang fenders and keep racing on, you know, unlike a single seater. And then they have the performance too. Like, these are, you know, no joke. Like, yeah, they produce some serious downforce. Just a ton of the cornering speeds are incredible. Braking is incredible. So I really enjoy driving and racing a GT3 car. I think that sports car racing lacks, it's sort of missing the connection between driver and fan. Sports car racing is more about manufacturer and fan, and the driver's kind of not part of the equation. So I would say that, to me, if I could, you know, elevate, you know, one form of motorsport, you know, to the level that Formula One is, I would say it would be GT racing. I think that, you know, on that topic, the Drive to Survive series, I've met so many people in the last year that, you know what I do, or when they learn what I do, it's like, oh, you know, me and my wife or my girlfriend and I have been watching Drive to Survive. We love it. And it's like, total non-racers, non-car people have now fell in love with Formula One, you know, because of that show. It would be great if sports car racing could, you know, do something similar.
Yeah. Have you noticed, because I think that, like, that show was insane, and what it's done for the awareness, I think, of all motorsports, really. I think NASCAR certainly, at least at the cup level, got a pretty big bump from that. IndyCar, I think, benefited a little bit. Have you noticed more interest, or just a rising tide in general a little bit around all motorsports, do you think?
All I can say is, like, having had conversations with people that I didn't think were car people or racers or fans, you know, they bring it up to me that they watch the show and that they're now fans of the sport and that they'd like to, you know, go watch a race. So I think it's probably been a benefit to all forms of motorsport for sure. You know, just more specifically F1, obviously for the reasons that it was based on the show. But
I mean, crazy, like their numbers have to be insane now. Insane. Like all the same line, like I'll show up to a party and, you know, some girl who I had no idea was into racing asking me if I watched third practice yesterday. Like, what? Yeah.
No, that's good.
Any plans or anything you can share about next season before I let you go here?
Yeah. Good timing on getting together. Just last Friday, it was sort of put it. It was public. I'm returning to Wayne Taylor Racing. We're committed to the IMSA WeatherTech, the Michelin Endurance Cup. So the four big endurance races.
Okay.
That's 24 hours of Daytona, 12 hours of Sebring, 6 hours Watkins Glen, and 10 hour Road Atlanta.
Awesome.
Except the Michelin Endurance Cup, and I'll be with. I'll be in the Acura NSX GT3, so a car I'm familiar with. We've got a strong lineup. Danny Formal, who was my teammate this year in the Lamborghini. Okay. We won the championship this year together. He's in that car as well. He'll be strong. Ashton Harrison, a young lady who's come through the Lamborghini program with Wayne Taylor Racing. Mm. She just won a championship this past season in the Acura. In the SRO Sports Car Championship, so she's in it. And then we've got Ryan Briscoe, former IndyCar driver.
Right.
He's got some WTR ties as well, having driven their prototype 2 years ago. He was in the car full season. So, long story short, it's a strong lineup for Daytona, and I think the entire endurance program.
Now, excuse my ignorance on that lineup. Going back to the driver ratings, would all of you guys be considered platinum, or what are the requirements?
We're gonna run in the pro-am category of GT3.
Got it.
So
you and Danny are the pros.
Actually, myself and Ryan Briscoe are the pros. Danny is classified as a silver, so technically still follows, you know, under an am, although he's super quick. And Ashton as well, I think as a bronze rating.
Got it.
So the thing with the sport now is, like, your you know, teams are looking for the fastest AMs they can find.
So the fastest silver.
Yeah, like yeah. That's, you know, the pros on paper, you know the gold and platinum drivers are within tenths of a second.
Sure.
It's the AMs, the bronze and silvers, that you see some diversity in lap time. And so, you know, the sort of the name of the game now is to have the fastest AM in the car. And so I think for that reason, we've got a strong lineup. You know, I wouldn't say we really have an AM.
Good. Yeah, that's good. Well, we got to chat after. I got to figure out, hopefully I'm a silver.
Yeah. Submit the application.
Yeah. That's good. Tell everyone where they can find you, follow along, all that good stuff.
Well, don't follow my Facebook because it's been hacked. I think there's a good looking chick as my profile pic right now, and she's offering some after hours
extracurricular activities. Yeah.
So I'm getting a lot of attention right now because of that. But follow my Instagram. It's just Kyle Marcelli.
Okay, good. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah, good luck this season.
Thank you. We'll chat again soon.
If you guys enjoyed this, give me a rating and share it with some friends.